Welcome to the Positivity and Prosperity Podcast. If you're ready for a dose of inspiration and insight, then you've come to the right place. My name is Victoria Maskell, and I'm a psychotherapist, mindset coach, and positivity practitioner. I help women just like you to have their own Cinderella stories and transform their mindsets to make their dreams a reality. So if you're a coach, an entrepreneur, or just looking to up-level your life, then this is the podcast for you. I'm going to be talking all things money mindset, manifesting your dream life, and how to use your subconscious to achieve anything you set your mind to. I'm going to be filling these podcast episodes with stories and inspiration for you, things to make you smile, feel supported, and get ready to crush your goals and manifest your dreams. There is no such thing as a coincidence in life. So just by listening to this podcast, you are one step closer to making your dream life, business, and mindset a reality. So if you're ready for today's dose of positivity and prosperity, then let's dive in. Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Positivity and Prosperity Podcast. As this is going live, it is the 13th of December, so we're almost halfway through the month of December, and that got me thinking about what it means to be in December and the feelings that we might be feeling at this time of year and how that could actually be triggering us in various ways. And so I have decided to bring the wonderful Annika from Coaching by Annika onto today's podcast. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about how you can bring back the magic to December. Annika talks about how December can really be seen as this idea of like the festival of contrast. We're going to be talking about how this affects manifestations, how this affects your mindset, and why we do numbing behaviors. And as you may know, if you've listened to these episodes before, Annika specializes in the sober world and how that links to manifestation. So Annika is going to tell you all about that. And this episode is going to give you hopefully some really good ideas for how to switch things up in December in whatever way is perfectly right for you. So we're going to go into the episode now. I will be back with a solo episode very, very soon. I hope you enjoy the episode and see you soon. I would love to welcome the amazing Annika to the podcast again. I'm so happy to have you back for another episode. How are you doing today?
I am great. Thank you, Victoria. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. Now, if people are just joining this episode, they don't know who you are, they don't know who you help, can you give them a little bit of a rundown of what a superstar coach you are?
Oh, thank you. So my Annika. I'm a health and mindset coach, and I specialize in alcohol-free living and manifestation. And I work with clients mainly on Zoom, but I also run workshops face-to-face and on Zoom. And I also run online courses as well.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So we're going to talk about some amazing things you've got coming up. We're going to be talking about the concept of December and how it brings up all of these strange feelings and how we can navigate it. But let's talk about manifestation first. Now, I actually have to say, I'm not wearing mine, but Annika is so lovely. For my birthday, she bought me the most gorgeous manifestation ring, and we both have one, and Annika is wearing hers right now. And I'll tag a picture on my Instagram of the rings, because we've got a picture of us together, haven't we, actually, holding the rings up. And the space in the middle of the ring represents creating space to allow manifestations in. So,
sorry to interrupt, Victoria. Just so people understand, it's a ring, but it's a ring with it looks like the edges of where a stone would go, but there's just a hole where the stone would be, isn't there?
That's a much better description than I went with. Yes, because people are like, the space represents what? Now, you see, this is, you're going to have to come over to both of our Instagrams. Annika, what's your Instagram?
Coaching by Annika.
And I'm at victoria.maskell. And you will have to see, our rings are slightly different. So you need to come and find us on Instagram to work out what we are talking about. They are so beautiful. And I get so many compliments. People are always like, oh, I like your ring. I'm like, oh, well, my amazing friend Annika got it for me. And we'll tag, what's the name of the person who makes them?
So the lady who makes them is called Lucy. She's one of my very good friends, but her jewelry company is called Hara Studios.
Okay, I'll make sure that's all tagged just in case anyone's like, oh my gosh, I need one. Right, so we're going to start talking about manifestation. The first question I have for you is, what's the best thing you've manifested recently? And by best, I don't necessarily mean like the biggest, just something really cool that you've manifested.
So for me, in terms of labeling things as being, you know, really, really good manifestations, there is always things that really develop my trust muscle with the universe. So, you know, when you ask for something and then the universe delivers and you think, yes, like you get more and more trust and belief and excitement about how supported we are. So mine was I own a property in Keighley, and I had a 6 monthly service fees on my apartment, and it was 690 something pounds. I mean, you know, and you just get a bill and it's bigger than it normally is and you think, oh dear lord. So I paid it, of course I did, but this was that was the money that was waiting in my bank to pay my rent, because I rent a property as well for this month. And I thought, oh, my rent was coming out in 5 days. So I said to the universe, it's okay, thank you so much for replacing that money for me before my rent comes out. And the money turned up within that 5 day period. And you know what? Talking about trust muscles, I knew it was going to happen. I just knew it was, and it did.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things with manifestation. It's developing that trust muscle. And I don't think human beings will ever get to a stage where they're like, no, I don't doubt anything, because doubt is natural. It's part of our human instinct. And I know you've had some incredible manifestations, but what you've just told me there is you felt a feeling and you went, oh, that doesn't feel good. Oh, but hang on a minute. I'm going to reframe this. I know it's all going to be fine. Universe, off you go. Do your magic, do your work. And then it just sorts itself out. And how did you feel when you realized you'd gone through that manifestation cycle?
Interesting, because when I asked for it, I kind of imagined myself like dancing around my apartment saying thank you, thank you, thank you, and then that's exactly what I did.
Well, there you go.
Yes, universe,
there you go. You programmed your subconscious mind and you actually then manifested the response to the feeling of the thing you wanted.
Yeah. How about you, Victoria? What have you manifested?
So anyone who's listened to the podcast before or knows me knows that I don't know why I'm picking the book up, because no one can see this because this is a podcast, but you can see it. Okay. One of my absolute favorite books is E Squared, and I love E Cubed as well, but E Squared by Pam Grout, because she talks about experiments that help you understand how powerful we are, how powerful our manifestation is and consciousness and all of that. And one of my friends, I've actually just sent him the book, and this was right, one of my clients actually is to I have to thank for this. She has sent her team the book and they are all doing the experiments week by week, and I was like, this is a great idea. So I sent a message to my friend and I basically said, are you up for an experiment? Gave him no details, just that, and he was like, of course, yes, that's what we like to hear. Sent him the book, and each week or every kind of few days we're doing one of the experiments. The first one is basically 48 hours you state to the universe that you want to see a sign of manifestation or higher power or how powerful our thoughts are, something that gives you that feeling of like, oh. And maybe did you have that feeling when you manifested that, like, oh, this is really cool, I've created this?
Yeah, it's a really magical feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely. And I would really recommend the Pam Grout book to anyone who is new to manifestation or not. I've probably done the experiments in this about 5 times, but I set the intention and technically 2 things happened. So the first one, my mum and I have this thing that we kind of start and stop technology, which sounds really weird, mainly clocks and watches. She starts them, I stop them. I don't really wear a watch other than my Apple Watch, because normal watches, the batteries don't last on me. If I give them to my mum, they start working again. She gives them back to me and they stop. She had this clock in her kitchen for years, that whenever mum and dad went on holiday, the clock would stop. When they came back, they'd be like, oh, the clock stopped. They'd be in the house for like 10 minutes and it would start again. How weird is that? So my shower radio had stopped. It needed charging. And I was like, oh, went to have a shower. And I thought, I'll just try it again. it turns on, suddenly it finds some battery for the perfect amount of my time of my shower, and then it stopped just as my shower stopped, and I was like,
oh, I love it.
So that was the first one. The second one, years ago, I took a course with someone called Kimberly Wenya. I don't know if she's still working in this space, but she's really, really good. And she gave us this activity to kind of find a way of finding your sign from the universe. And I decided mine was polar bears. So I'd had this first sign and I was like, I think that's a sign, but is it? About, I don't know, a few hours later, I opened my wardrobe and out of my wardrobe fell my dressing gown onto me. And my dressing gown is covered in polar bears, which is obviously my sign from the universe. And it made me laugh because I was like, I've literally just been hit in the face with my sign.
As yeah, if to say, like, it's literally going to hit you around the face with it.
And I think, I don't know if you agree with this, but I think in manifestation in general, there are sometimes signs from the universe or things that happen as a way of going, you're not really listening to me, so I'm going to show you a huge sign. I'm going to put it right in front of you because you're not quite there yet. Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, I would say that actually a rock bottom is an extreme version of that. It's when we've ignored the signs, we've ignored ourselves for so long that eventually the universe is like, all right, then I'm going to have to pull the rug from underneath you. Everything's going to come crumbling down, but it's for your own good.
And
then
Yeah. You haven't listened to the little signs. So I'm just going to give you one massive, great big sign and it's all going to be amazing. But you've got to trust that process again. It's all about trust. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I love that. If anyone is listening to this and would like to share with us things you've recently manifested, I don't know about you, Annika, but I love it when people do that. So get in touch with us. Send us a message on Instagram. We would love to hear that. Now, we were thinking about what we wanted to share with you today. And through some conversations, obviously this is being recorded and going out in December. And I think December is a bit of a funny month. I was saying to Annika just a minute ago that I don't necessarily feel that Christmassy. Not that I feel bad, I just haven't really kind of got into the Christmas songs and I haven't actually decorated my house yet. Don't worry, I'm going to do it tonight. But I think it's an interesting month because December sort of represents the end of the year. And obviously, as we go into January, people start thinking about what they want to create, setting goals, changing habits. But I think we're going to talk about some of the difficulties and kind of how to navigate December going into January. So what's your take on December? Let's start there.
Okay, so first of all, if we look at December and January, like from a bird's eye perspective, January is the beginning of the year. January is where we want to manifest everything. Yeah. And December is the month before that. It's the month that is preparing us for the beginning of this new year. And December can be a very, very emotional time. We've got many of us have lots of very happy memories about Christmas and also many unhappy memories. Mm-hmm. It's a time of year where we really take stock, we reflect, we think about what do I always do at this time of year? What was I doing this time last year? What have I done in the many years before? And I think it's a real month of contrast because in some ways you could say Christmas is the festival of abundance and love. Mm. And we celebrate love and abundance. But it's also a festival of contrast. It's where the universal law of contrast is so clear and out there because it's also a festival of lack because every Christmas, the older we get, unfortunately, the more we do feel lack. We feel lack of, oh, I'm not young anymore. I'm not a child. I'm not running around waiting for Santa Claus to arrive. So-and-so isn't here anymore. That relationship's not here anymore. I remember the Christmas that I had a lovely time with this boyfriend or girlfriend. And I remember, and that's gone. And now I'm here and I'm in lack. So it can be... Yeah, as I say, it can be very positive, but it's almost, it's true. We can't have one thing without the other. We can't live. We were in a realm of contrast. So all the love we've ever had at Christmas can also cause a lot of grief at some point in our lives. So for this reason, we might think, because I obviously help people with being alcohol free. And lots of people talk about Christmas being very triggering because, you know, we're getting invited to lots of parties and we think that we can't connect with others and we can't socialize without alcohol, which, by the way, is absolutely not true, but that's a whole other podcast. we also spend a lot of Christmas wanting to numb some very, very old, uncomfortable feelings that might be popping up. You know, Christmas Day, even if we're not feeling in lack, we're going to get, if we're with our family, we're much more likely to get some real old childhood wounds triggered by our siblings, mm-hmm. our parents, our uncles, our aunties, and all of these old things kind of rear their ugly heads again. But I think December is a month of ultimate healing, because when we are not numbing, when we're not, because numbing is essentially pressing the pause button on our healing process. When we show up for these feelings and we see it as really, really, really helpful and healing that they've come up, because they've come up to be released. And when we allow ourselves to fully process them and release them, December can be such an incredible month of healing. And of course, when we're releasing, we're clearing space, which just perfectly prepares us for January, where we want to manifest and when we want to begin our new year. We need to clear space to manifest, right?
And that's like the ring, isn't it? Like, there is space to welcome in positive things. Yeah. Oh my gosh, there were so many things you said. I really like that phrase, festival of contrast, because I would say, when I think about the 12 laws of the universe, yes, we've got the law of attraction, the one everyone talks about, but there's the law of polarity as well, that we don't understand the good without understanding what the bad is, or we don't understand the light without the dark. And I think it's really interesting that you've brought that into this moment of December to January. And something else that sort of dawned on me, we as human beings create structure out of things that sort of doesn't really exist. And what I mean by that is, December is, oh my gosh, it's nearly the end of the year. Sometimes people are going, oh, I won't start that yet, or I won't do that yet because it's nearly the end of the year. I'll wait until January. I'll wait until it's the fresh year. We start new things in January. A bit like when people say, oh, you can't start a diet on a Wednesday. You have to wait until Monday. It's like we create these rules when actually it could be that, I don't know, July is the best month to change things. But no one thinks like that because of the way the world is structured around end of a year and start of a year. So I guess what I'm thinking is we can touch on maybe how people can use this to their advantage. So like you were talking about the numbing behaviors and stuff. Let's touch on that then. What do you mean by numbing behaviors?
Okay, so numbing behaviors are when we consume something external to stop feeling something we don't want to feel. Mm-hmm. And many of us, most of us, were trained to do this as children, usually with sugar.
Yeah.
Don't cry, sweetheart. Have a chocolate. Be a good girl, darling. Don't cry. There we go. Have this. So you feel better now, don't you? And then as we get older, the chocolate turns into a glass of wine. And again, it's social brainwashing. We are being told by many different people, probably also our mothers, darling, have a glass of wine, you'll feel better. In the 80s and the 90s, have a cigarette, not so much anymore, not so in vogue. It might be numbing out in front of Netflix. It might be gambling. It might be online shopping. But it's all consuming something external to avoid feeling an uncomfortable feeling. And we live in a society that has taught us to fear our emotions. We have some emotions that we think are not safe and that we are not able to look at. And when we start to reframe what emotions are here to do, we start to see all emotions as healing. Emotions are your medicine. And even when they really hurt, they're doing good. You need to lie down, surrender, and go, oh, okay, I'll just let this medicine do what it's going to do. Let me make myself comfortable. Let me make this easy for myself. We can self soothe without numbing. You know, you can make yourself comfortable. But when we're not repressing, because when we numb, we're repressing, we're pushing it down. And basically the way I visualize it is like a popcorn machine. Popcorn's bubbling, and then eventually explodes. Yeah. But when we don't do that, when we don't repress, our feelings move through us and we release them.
Yeah. I've never really thought of emotions as medicine, but that's a really good point, because you're right. It's okay to feel happy and it's okay to feel that, but goodness me, you can't feel sad, or you can't feel fearful, you can't feel this, when actually that's another thing that we've created structure around. We've said that's a good emotion, that's a bad emotion. But actually, if we go back to that idea of festival of contrast, feeling the labeled bad emotion allows you to understand what you want, gives you clarity around what you don't want, allows you to make changes. And I would say all of those things are really positive, but I can definitely, I'm sure I've done it myself. I'm sure I still do it. There are things that I do as avoiding behaviors. And then there seems to be a cycle, doesn't there, with numbing behaviors.
Yeah. And also I think it's important that we don't shame ourselves every time we notice we're doing it, because as you say, even with the best will in the world, you don't drink either.
No.
I no longer drink. I go out of my way to not numb things, but we will often notice ourselves doing it and go, hang on a minute, I know what's going on here. We can catch ourselves, I'm numbing, aren't I? And it's okay to if you notice that. It's about stopping and going, oh, right, what's going on? What do I need to feel? Just like you would with a child. If you're a parent and you see your child's upset, you go, oh, should we have a chat? Would you like to tell me what's wrong? And we need to do that with ourselves more often,
yeah.
I think.
One of my friends has got this really beautiful way of being with her daughter when her daughter's upset. And I overheard her saying something, I may have mentioned it in a podcast episode, but I'd probably phrase it wrong, but she was sort of saying her daughter had, I don't know, she'd fallen over, or she was crying, something had upset her. And she said something like, yeah, that's okay. Yep. It must be really scary. Are you feeling some big feelings right now? And it was just the most beautiful phrasing, because it was like she was saying, I'm here, I'm supporting you, I'm comforting you, you're going to be okay. But it wasn't a shh, 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 stop, 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 shh. Because that is something when we're taught that as a child, no, don't cry, bottle up the emotions, stop, stop. Sometimes you just need to let that go through and go, yeah, it did hurt. Yeah, I was sad. Oh, okay, hang on a minute. I'm realizing I'm okay now. Oh, it doesn't hurt as much. Oh, I'm safe. And that, I think, is a really important sort of psychological lesson, if you like, that you're allowed to feel a feeling and it's allowed to be scary or whatever, but it's okay. Versus I'm feeling a feeling. Oh, I've been stopped. I'm not allowed to do that. That's not okay. And I think that can emotionally lead to some quite negative stuff if you're not allowed to process. And I know you talk about processing and like looking at things and asking yourself really good questions around it.
Yeah. And I know, sorry if this is like a really not very nice image, but I think it's one that we can all relate to. If you think about being sick.
Yeah.
When we feel sick, when it's a really, yeah, we might try and repress it instantly because we think, no, it's not convenient for me to be sick right now. So I'm in the middle of a hotel. I can't be sick. So we will repress it. But we know it's going to have to come up.
Yeah.
Take ourselves somewhere safe.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with that horrible, horrible feeling of being sick, and you just have to ride it out. You just have to let those feelings of nausea run all over your body. You have to surrender to it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go through the process of being sick. And then guess what? It's gone. It's released.
Yeah.
And that is what feeling big emotions is like. You've got to ride the wave and let it do what it needs to do in a safe place. You can take yourself somewhere safe, like you would if you were being sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
You feel, without dragging this analogy out too much, you do always feel so much better when you've been sick, because it's sort of a, you've got rid of that. You've moved through that. That's gone. That's out of your body. And emotions can be the same. And I think December is a funny month, because there is potentially pressure, as you were saying, to socialize, potentially pressure to be feeling a certain way. Definitely time for reflection. Maybe people have lost loved ones or family members, or their relationships have just changed. It doesn't necessarily mean they're not around. And you naturally compare and you naturally go, oh, well, last year I was. But I suppose the flip side of that is you might also go, oh, wow, that doesn't upset me anymore. I've really made progress in that.
Yes.
Actually, so again, this, I like that phrase festival of contrast, because it works both ways. So let's touch, as both of us don't drink, let's touch on the socializing side of things and maybe some of the pressures that people might be feeling at this time of year.
So the first thing is that pretty much everything society teaches you about alcohol is the opposite of the truth. One of those examples of the one, sorry, I can't get my words out today. An example of this is, you know, you can't socialize without alcohol, or you can't connect with others without alcohol. And it is not true. And so many people are scared of going to parties without drinking. Like, how will I enjoy myself? How will I have fun? And if you are one of these people, and especially if you're newly sober and you're just feeling really like, oh, how am I going to do it? I just want you to remember going to a party when you were small. Yeah. When you get to a children's party, all the children are hiding behind their mummy's legs, being really shy. They don't, oh, I don't know if I'm going to talk to anybody. And then after about an hour, they're all running around having the best time ever, and they cry when they have to go home.
Yep.
It's completely normal to take a bit of time to settle down into a social situation. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It doesn't mean you have social anxiety. It just means you're normal. And we've been trained as adults to believe that it was the glass of wine in our hand that made us settle down. But that happens anyway. Children are proof of this.
Yeah.
And we absolutely do not connect with others more because we're inebriated. Alcohol slows your brain down. It makes us forget what we just said. We repeat ourselves. When you watch people who've been drinking talk to each other, they're not really talking to each other. At each other.
Yeah, I'm only laughing because obviously I think the last time I actually had a drink to the point where I drank a whole drink, I think it was about 10 years ago, maybe long. Oh no, it must have been longer. No, I think it could be 15 years actually.
Oh really? Wow.
Yeah, it's a significant period of time. Mainly because I just don't like the taste of it. It wasn't necessarily a conscious decision. It was like, I just don't really enjoy this, and I just sort of stopped doing it. But I can picture so many times where I've been the fly on the wall, or I've gone into a room and I've just been, I don't know, just living. And you overhear a conversation and you just smile because you're like, neither of those two people are listening to each other. And it's hilarious because they think they are. And it's like, oh, and I don't say that in a judgy way. It's just, you're right. We're taught certain things about alcohol. We're taught, well, this is what I would perceive them. We're taught it makes you confident. We're taught it relaxes you. We're taught it is really good in social situations because then everyone can bond and connect. I suppose if anything, I initially would have thought like, oh, am I going to be the odd one out if I'm not drinking? Now, I don't care if I'm with people that are drinking or not. Like, I'm there to have a good time and I have a good time regardless. But there's definitely stories and programs and beliefs. And I totally can see how that could be almost like, what's the phrase? Passed down through the generations. Like,
100%.
You know, a parent or a friend says, you look like you've had a really difficult day. Would you like a glass of wine? And because it helps them, because it's their numbing behavior or it's whatever, it's like they're doing a nice thing because they're trying to support someone in a way that helps them. But what would you say are some of the flip sides of alcohol? Does that make sense? Do you know what
the
I mean?
The downsides of it, you mean?
Yeah, the downsides. Some of the like the myths that actually, I don't know. You know what I mean. You know yeah. what I mean.
So We think that we enjoy drinking, or we did, I did, and many people still do. If you actually look at the neurochemistry around what's going on when you drink, you are stimulating serotonin, endorphins, the GABA system, which relaxes us, the dopamine pathways. But this buzz lasts for 20 minutes, and then our brain brings us back into balance by releasing dynorphin, cortisol, and adrenaline. And these are stress hormones. Dynorphin's a depressant, and it brings us to feeling worse than we were before. So if you're feeling stressed and then you have a drink, then you end up feeling more stressed than you started, and then we have another drink, and then we pull ourselves further and further down. So alcohol does not relax us. This is why we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning wired and we can't get back to sleep, because of adrenaline in our bodies when we've been drinking. You know, how many times have I said when I was a drinker after Christmas or after a holiday, God, I'm absolutely exhausted, I need another holiday to recover because I drank so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the last time I went out, I remember messaging my friend's brother, because he sort of, in my mind, he knew medical stuff. If he's listening, he's probably like, I'm not a doctor. But I remember phoning him up and being like, I'm really scared. My heart is racing. I've woken up at 6 in the morning, which if I'm not a morning person, I felt horrendous. And he was like, what have you had to drink? And I was like, I did have a Jägerbomb and some Prosecco. He was like, oh, for goodness sake. Okay. And now it makes sense what you're saying about how our body reacts to the alcohol that we put into it, and we think we're doing something good. We think, oh, this is going to chill me out, this is going to be so lovely, And actually it's not doing that. We're taught it should, but it really doesn't actually do that to us.
The scary thing is, though, is that this adrenaline and cortisol is what creates hangover anxiety. And when people are drinking daily, like I was at certain points in my drinking career, and even if you're not drinking daily, it takes about 3 months to kind of recalibrate. We start to believe that we are just anxious and that we need a drink to calm us down. Yeah. But it's actually the alcohol that's perpetuating this feeling of anxiety. Now, of course, there are other reasons that we can feel anxious, but alcohol just is like throwing petrol on a bonfire with anxiety.
Yeah, and I hadn't realized that either. But it makes sense when I look back, because I remember a time at university, I got into gin and tonic. I decided that was my, I like gin and tonic. I don't think I really did, but I liked the idea of it. But every time I would drink gin, I'd cry. And it made me so emotional. And yeah. I think my dad said, oh, it used to be called Mother's Ruin. There was some like old wives' tale. And I was like, I don't understand. I'm not a super duper emotional person. But as soon as I had some gin, I was like, and I think the thing with me is I didn't like not feeling in control of myself. And for me, alcohol made me not feel in control. Now, some people were like, oh, that's the thing I love about it. But I didn't like that feeling. So it was obviously really easy for me to not drink because I didn't like the taste of it. I know some people are like, but I just think wine tastes amazing. But I think it allowed me to go, I don't want to do it. I don't like the taste of it. And oh, thank goodness, I feel like me again. Yeah. That was my sort of process. What was your process through it?
Well, first of all, just to kind of link back to what you were saying about feeling emotional and crying, the reason that happened is because alcohol affects your limbic system, and it basically impedes your ability to regulate your emotions. So this is why, and I can definitely tell you, I've done this, and many of us have, probably many people listening will go, oh yeah. Have you ever felt really, really sad about something? Like, let's say you've broken up with your boyfriend and you feel really low and you think, well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a good night. And you kind of get yourself ready. And you're like, right. And you want to numb, right? So you're like, let's get on it. Let's drink some drinks. And I'm going to numb these feelings. And after about an hour, you cannot stop crying and someone has to take you home because you're in absolute state. And you just stop. Yeah, that'll be your limbic system. You're not able to use it properly. Yeah. And you wake up the next day feeling so embarrassed.
Yeah. I've done it. I've seen it. But again, when you explain it like that, it makes sense. It makes sense that you're feeling a feeling and you're like, right, this is how I'm going to solve it. Because we want to be back in control. We want to be feeling better. We maybe choose something that isn't the best choice at the time. And it actually just makes us feel worse. And then we're like, oh, there we go again. It's the cycle. It's the cycle of, I felt a feeling I didn't like. I made a bad decision about what I was going to do about it. Felt better for a little bit and then felt a lot worse. And then, oh, I'll just keep repeating the cycle because I don't know how to break out of it. Like, I'm sure we've all, whether it's with food, with alcohol, with, I don't know, nail biting. There's so many different behaviors that we do. So what can people do instead then?
So when we stop numbing, what we do is we sign up to a kind of a brave but exciting and beautiful journey, because we start to show up for our emotions. And when we start to reframe them and see that they're not scary, they're not monsters under our bed, they're like guardian angels that have come to help us, like, up level. When we start to welcome them in, we get to process, we kind of feel like assignments, really, because things will show up and you have to like pass the assignment, work on it, process it, and then you move up. So what happens is this amazing process, as yes, you have a bit of discomfort, but the more you show up for it and the more you process it, the more you up level and the better you feel. And then another one comes along and then you up level again and you feel even better. And this is how we go on this magical journey of manifestation. I mean, we're all manifesting all the time because that's what we do, but are you manifesting what you want? You're only able to manifest that which you think you are worthy of, that which you think you deserve. And our self-worth, it all comes down to our subconscious mind. And generally, whenever we're numbing, we're all numbing the fact that we don't think we're enough. Mm-hmm. We're numbing our lack of worthiness. We're numbing the fact that we hate ourselves. And when we stop doing that and we kind of go, eek, I don't really want to look at this, but let's start clearing this up, we start to up level. And this is why every year in sobriety, I do not know one person who is sober who has not gone, OMG. My life has gone from 0 to 100. Like, look in the, and like, so this Christmas, I have come to my day of reckoning and gone, OMG, this time last year, I was only doing this and this, and I only thought this about myself. And now look at where I am. Oh, what am I going to be like next year? And this is so exciting. So I feel like I've gone off on a tangent. I've kind of forgotten what the point was.
But... No, I love that. I love that. Because what you were talking about was actually seeing the things that cause, seeing the triggers as things to work on so that you can constantly up level. And this being the perfect time of year to do exactly that, because you've got that kind of momentum around, okay, it's December into January, let's clear some space, it's time to get rid of this stuff, let's not numb it, let's actually make a change, so that in 12 months time you're looking back and going, oh my gosh, look at what I've created and changed, and how you feel about yourself as well.
And actually, I've just had this download just saying that, like, December is like ayahuasca. Like, yeah. People pay a lot of money to go and do ayahuasca ceremonies, those of you that haven't heard of it, where you literally end up vomiting up all sorts of old trauma, and it's a hugely healing ceremony that a plant medicine ceremony that people go through. And December is like the ayahuasca of the year. It's where everything gets brought up and you can choose to repress it. And see things in your ear and go la 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 and stay still, or you can go, no, let me have my magical ceremony, let's bring all this stuff up, it might be uncomfortable, but oh my goodness, I am so excited for how amazing I'm going to feel afterwards.
And do you know what, if I knew how to spell ayahuasca, I would have written that down. December is that, I can't even pronounce it, I will find out how you spell it, but that's such a nice analogy though, isn't it? It's like, okay, I'm feeling these feelings, I'm allowed to, I don't know if I like the word purge, I'm allowed to release, I like the word release, that's a much nicer word, and move forward. And I would also say, like, at your own pace, if you know there's 10 things that are frustrating you, you don't have to work on all of those now. It doesn't have to be this massive task. It can be, okay, I'm gonna start here, oh hang on a minute, I feel better, now I'm gonna move on to this one. And like we were saying right at the start about manifestation, I think it's the reason I really like the Pam Grout book is it's building on a feeling, it's building on trust, it's building on, oh hang on a minute, I set that experiment and look what showed up. And it's like, it's that neuroplasticity, did I just say that wrong, neuroplasticity, where it's like you're strengthening. I was going
New Zealand, sorry.
I'm not even going to try and do the actual accent. But it's like building on a feeling, and you can build on positive feelings just as much as negative. And I think it's easier sometimes to dwell in, this isn't right, this isn't right, this isn't right. But if you just go, okay, so what do I want? And how do I want to feel? You're sending that amazing electrical energy and emphasis into what you do want to have. And I know I have it on good authority that you've actually created this amazing container that helps people to do that. So would you like to share, like, what that's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've created a course called Sober and Soulful, and it's a 6-week intensive course, and it is designed to hold your hand through letting go of alcohol and using what I call the abundance approach to let go of it and to walk into your spiritual healing journey, where you basically up level your manifestation powers. So in the course I explain to you, like, lots of the science and spirituality behind why this works, but I also guide you through that process so that by the end of that 6 weeks you will have been alcohol free for that time, and you will have started to gain some real proof around you know, your manifestation power, and really just using all of the things that I've learned through my journey and my experiments and myself. So yeah, I'm really, really excited to share that. It's coming out in January.
Sober and Soulful. Okay, where did the idea for this come from? Was it, you just mentioned like some of the stuff you've gone through, but was it coaching clients? Was it, what made you put it together as a course?
So it's really just a culmination of so many things I've learned. Obviously, when I'm coaching people, I mean, when we say coaching, any good coach does a lot of coaching, but we also slip into mentoring, we slip into teaching, because it's not about us and what we want to call ourselves. It's about the client and what they need, and it's about outcomes. So we do a little bit of everything depending on what the client's presenting with. But there's so much stuff that I know now around the way our brain works, brand psychology, things that I learned from you, hypnotherapy perspectives, manifestation theory, quantum physics. There's so much stuff that I know that I can't just, you know, just transmit on a coaching call everything I know to clients. They want to know it, but at the same time, that's not how coaching sessions work. Yeah. So I wanted to bring something in that could kind of run alongside, you know, you don't have to be a client with me to do this course, but some people are, but it's a separate way you can really just listen to, let your inner geek come out and really just learn and be like, right, let me learn all this stuff. So it's like years of research really that I've put into this 6-week course.
And do you know what? That's kind of how I see the podcast, actually. I know that if I'm coaching someone, we've got an hour. The first question I'm probably going to ask them, other than the how are you, how's your day been, you know, not straight in, but like, is what do you want to have at the end of today's session that you don't have right now? And I think the podcast allows me to give information to people so they can listen to it. They can listen about masculine and feminine energy. They can listen about what it means to surrender. And then in a coaching session, you can take elements of that, but you really tailor it to the individual and the person. So I think having a course allows you to kind of do both and bring that in. Okay, so sober and soulful then. What would you say to someone who is on that tipping point right now and they're sort of thinking, I really quite like alcohol, but I also kind of don't want to drink alcohol. And I do quite like a glass of wine, and I'm a bit scared of letting go of that, oh, I'm having a nice glass of wine. But also I'm really open to this idea that actually my life could be even more amazing without it. What would you say to that person who's sort of like, what should I do?
So I would give you back your power, and I would remind you, this is your human experience. You chose to come here as a soul for a human experience, and it's an adventure, and it's an adventure where you have the opportunity to grow and up level and expand your soul while you're on this experience. And I would just ask you to approach this with a bit of curiosity. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Nobody tells you what to do. You have free will. But approach it with curiosity and just play around with what I'm teaching you, with trying out some alcohol-free periods, and playing around and think of yourself. And I know this sounds weird, but the more and more you go down this path, the more you realize that there is such a thing as magic. And I know that you agree, because the stuff that you teach is just proof that the magic is real. And when you start to realize how magical you are, you will start to get more and more curious about how you can play around with that. But who am I to tell you what the rules look like? I'll just give you information. I'll give you things to play with, and you're in charge.
Oh, that I know I don't drink, but if I did, that to me would feel really freeing, because I don't personally like the idea of being told what to do. And what I mean by that is, in the past I've been to see sort of nutritionists, or and they've given me some really good advice, but I really like biscuits and I really like chocolate and I quite like cake. And the idea, I have a story and I have resistance around being told I can't have those things. Now I'm probably making that up, because there are probably people out there that would say, of course you can live a healthy and balanced life that involves those things. But I've created a story that, no, I wouldn't want to do a course on that because I'd be told why sugar is awful, and I don't want that in my head. But what you've actually just said is, you are going to give people ideas, experiments, and just give them information to play around with, and then it's their choice. It's their choice to join, it's their choice to see if it's interesting for them, it's their choice to try and uncover what makes them magical, because I completely agree. Like, what's that Roald Dahl quote about magic?
Oh, you know what? I love this quote, and I was listening to a Marissa Peer podcast today, and she quoted it as well, literally just a couple of hours before. Oh. So if
Those that don't believe in magic won't find it or something.
Yeah, those people that don't believe in magic will never be able to find it or something like that. But it's so true.
It is so true. It is so true. And I think I still, you know, think that there could be some fear around not drinking for some people. What's your take on like alcohol-free beer, alcohol-free cocktails? Where do you sit on that side of things?
I love alcohol-free drinks. Some people don't, and you know what, it doesn't matter. If you find them triggering, if you drink them and they make you want to drink alcohol, then don't. And you want to be sober, then don't drink them. I love them because for me, I had attached this idea of alcohol being a treat to the pretty bottles and pretty glasses, and these sort of quite grown-up flavors, and ritual around having a drink. And actually, now that I can have all of those things without the alcohol, I'm like, this was 90% of what I liked about it. And I've still got all of those things, but I don't have to have the alcohol anymore. Yeah. Win-win. And I know a lot of people feel like that.
Yeah. Well, you know that I've got a cupboard full of pretty glasses, like glasses that are meant for gin or for wine or for whatever. And I really like water. And I know that's very boring to some people, but I actually like it. But if I went to a bar or a restaurant or something like that, and they served me my water in this beautiful glass, maybe with a piece of fruit shoved on the side or some frozen fruit in it, I'd be like, oh, it just adds to the experience. Like, it feels abundant. It feels special. And I wonder if, like cocktails, I look at them, I'm like, oh, they look so pretty. They're in different glasses. To me, that's the only bit that's appealing. Because then when I taste it, I'm like, oh, yeah. I went about a year ago to this restaurant, and I didn't read it properly, so it is my fault. But it said something about non-alcoholic cocktail. So I was in. I was like, okay. And it was going to be served in a champagne flute, a Prosecco glass, whatever you call it. And it said it had peach syrup in it. I was like, oh, yes. Took one sip of it and went, oh no, because they'd put in it non-alcoholic Prosecco that tastes like Prosecco. And I don't like the taste of Prosecco. I wish they'd made it with lemonade or sparkling water. And I was like, read the menu, Victoria. But other people would have gone, oh, amazing. I don't have to have I'm going to take words that are probably wrong from you, neurological effect of alcohol, but I can have the experience of treating myself and enjoying things in a different way.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I realized when I started my alcohol-free journey, and I teach it to my clients all the time, is that you don't have to miss out on anything when you don't drink. You get to have the ritual, you get to have the grown-up drinks, you get to have the parties. You can, I have sat in shopping trolleys at 3 a.m. and it's so much more fun when you're sober. That's real like bravery, and that's real silliness. I'm waking up thinking, I just did that because I felt like it, and I didn't feel embarrassed or ashamed or anxious about it. I just thought, that's just the sort of person I am, just silly.
Yeah. That's such a good point. You can still be fun and not drink alcohol. There's a story we're told. We're told that all the fun people, oh, okay, I'm going to bring in friends. Right. Fun Bobby. What happens to poor Fun Bobby? When he stops drinking, he's suddenly dull Bobby.
Oh, God, that's so bad, that messaging, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love Friends, but there is some quite worrying 90s messaging in it, especially around the thinness of everyone in that programme. But that's
absolutely. Like, you know I love Friends, absolutely. Now, when you reflect back on some of the ways they handled important conversations, obviously it was in the early 90s, society viewed things slightly differently, maybe society hadn't moved on quite far enough, but yeah, Fun Bobby is Fun Bobby, and then they realize how much everyone's drunk and they're like, oh, I only had a glass, I only had two, and then he stops drinking and suddenly he's portrayed as really dull, and poor Monica then is like, oh my god, I need a drink. The conversation is, alcohol makes you fun, take away alcohol and you're no longer fun, and that's really sad because it's just not true.
Yeah, God, yeah, I hadn't even thought of that.
So oh dear, true. Sorry. You can now add that into Sober and Soulful. That can
I will.
So if anyone is listening to this and they're interested, they're like, I want to dip my toe into this. This might be for me. Where can they find out more, and how can they sort of do that toe dipping bit?
If you want to just dip your toe into the water, if you like, I have got a free course coming up on the 4th of January. I don't like calling it dry January because dry is just the connotations of that. No. Yeah. So my course is Make January Magical. So this is how we reframe dry January. It's going to be magical. So even if you just want to have 30 days off, come along. It's on the 4th of Jan, 6 p.m. UK time. If you pop onto my website, I'm sure Victoria will put the link in the show notes. You can just register for that free of charge, easy peasy. And I'll send you the Zoom link on the day.
Awesome.
And if you're thinking about Sober and Soulful and you'd like to come meet me first and try some of my stuff, then come along and you can sign up after that, because Sober and Soulful starts on the 9th. So right. You can come along to that workshop and then sign up. If, however, you are listening to this and you're like, I really want to do Sober and Soulful, then do get that book now, because I have got a early bird discount that is still on, which actually finishes on the 15th of December. However, if you quote to me that you are a listener of Victoria's podcast, then I'll give you a small extension on that. So I will give you a 4-day extension on that deadline for your early bird discount. So get in touch, let's get that booked in. And of course you can book last minute at the normal rate, that's also available to you.
Okay, so I will make sure all of that information is in the show notes. If you ever can't find anything, just drop me an email to victoria@victoriamaskell.com and I will pass on all of those details. I actually also really like that it starts on the 9th of January, because then people don't have the pressure of potentially going out at New Year and then thinking they've got to wake up in the morning and go, oh, I've got to start. I don't like the phrase dry January either. It sounds
so depressing.
It sounds dehydrated. It sounds restricting. It sounds like there's no fun in it, when actually you're going to just show them how to make January magical.
Yeah, bring back the magic, people.
Yes, bring back the magic. Okay, yeah. there's the episode title. Bring back the magic.
Yeah.
Annika, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Just remind people again where they can find you on social media and your website.
I can do so. Social media, Instagram @coachingbyAnika. Annika is spelled A-N-N-E-K-A. And my website is www.coachingbyannika.co.uk.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm sure you'll be back for another episode very soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this content, I would so love it if you could leave me an iTunes review. You would totally make my day, and you'd help this podcast to reach other listeners just like you. And if you know someone who this content would help, then please share it with them. Share the love, share the positivity. I hope you all have a wonderful and prosperous day, and I will see you all in the next episode.